Psalm 67 is a great missionary psalm, and it begins with the psalmist asking for about his own experience of God's grace, and then his desire to share that with others. If you're familiar at all with the Psalter, you know that every once in a while this little word Selah shows up, and nobody quite knows what it means. It seems to be sort of a pause and a think about that. And so you'll notice as I read the psalm that that word is in there. Please join me as I read Psalm 67 for you. May God be gracious to us and bless us, and make his face shine upon us, Selah, that your ways may be known on earth, your salvation among all nations. May the peoples praise you, O God. May all the peoples praise you. May the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you rule the peoples justly and guide the nations of the earth, Selah. May the peoples praise you, O God. May all the peoples praise you. Then the land will yield its harvest, and God, our God, will bless us. God will bless us, and all the ends of the earth will fear him. As we were planning chapel last spring and through the summer, and we were sort of working on this whole theme of overcoming and having victory in Christ, we were reminded that the women's soccer team had gone to Uganda, and we thought it would be a great opportunity to hear from them. So we're going to hear from Coach Sumner and three of the players as they talk about lessons from Uganda. Linda, please welcome them.
Good morning. We would just like to thank Dean Smith and the Chapel Committee for inviting us to share about our trip. As some of you may know, this past May, 11 of us traveled to Uganda, Africa on a missions trip. And before I begin to share about our trip, and three of my players are going to share about the experiences that we had, we just want to thank you so much for all of your support and all of your donations. There were 11 of us that traveled. We each brought one personal suitcase, and then we brought 13 suitcases of donated items from all of you, which included clothing, books, soccer balls, puzzles, school supplies for the children. So thank you so much for that. The owners of the guest house in Entebbe that we stayed at the first night said we broke a record for the most luggage ever. So we thank you. The missionaries were overwhelmed, and they thank you, and the church that we worked with, thank you. We're also so thankful for your prayers. I think I can speak for all of us that traveled. We just felt so covered in prayer the entire time that we were there. It was just unbelievable. When we arrived at the Entebbe airport, we were not only were we not missing anything, we had no issues getting through customs. We didn't have any serious health issues while we were there, and we just thank you for your prayers. Let me just tell you a little bit about how our trip came about. I started this job as the head women's soccer coach last August, about a week before camp started. So about maybe 3-4 days into camp, one of my players, Amanda Munch, had said she had just come back from Honduras on a missions trip, and she said it wasn't a soccer missions trip, it was just a trip, and she said, when she would go out in the evening with a soccer ball, there were just dozens of kids that would just swarm around her. And she said, wouldn't it be neat if we went as a team? And she said we could spread out and reach more kids and use soccer as a tool to reach these kids. So the enthusiasm caught on quickly, and our hearts were turned to Africa. Amanda and Abby Young had a connection with international teams, so I called them and told them about our idea. They sent out emails or contacts to all of their missionaries across the world, and sure enough, a couple in Uganda, Africa, responded that they would love to have a soccer team. Their name were Tim and Angie Sliedrecht, and they were wonderful hosts. Angie's sister Mandy and her husband Josh Sharda, they are also missionaries there. They're working as a team together there in Uganda, Africa. So for the 10 days we were in Uganda, Tim and Angie planned out each day for us, just maximizing our time and finding time for our mission and sightseeing and fun and rest and prayer and worship each day. On our second morning in Sirodi, Tim took us to climb Sirodi Rock. We went up about 6 a.m. in the morning, and we reached the top just before sunrise. We spread out on the rock, and we each took time for our own personal devotions. and as the sun rose, we could see the entire city of Sirote. We could see the downtown area, we could see the internally displaced people camps, we could see the church where we were doing the children's ministry, and Tim said that he would often go up there in the morning and just pray for the people of Sirote. Let me just share with you real quick a few facts about Sirote in Uganda. I don't know how many of you know about the Reign of Terror by Idi Amin in the 1970s, where an estimated 300,000 to 500,000 people were killed. And now, since the late 80s, Joseph Kony and his rebel group, the Lord's Resistance Army, has been fighting the government and has just committed so many unspeakable human rights violations, estimated between kidnapping 20,000 to 30,000 children, many have been sold into sex slavery. Because of the LRA there are about 2 million people living hopelessly in internally displaced people camps. And in these camps, domestic abuse and alcohol abuse run rampant. The suicide average worldwide, they said, was about 1 in 20 people. And in Uganda, the suicide rate is about 1 in 6. Outside of Christ, there's just no hope there. There's 2 million people in Uganda infected with HIV/AIDS. Team Beyond, Tim and Angie and Josh and Mandy's team is called Team Beyond, and they are trying to work alongside the Ugandans to help them transform communities and teach the local church the Christian worldview. One morning we went to an orphanage called Amaset. It's a shelter of hope and peace for the children with AIDS, and also a temporary shelter for children who have lost their mother. Tim and Angie adopted their youngest child, Moses, from Amaset. When Moses was about 6 months old, his mother died of AIDS. Thankfully, Moses has tested negative. There's a wall in Amaset. When you first walk in, it has a picture of every single child that has been through there. And if the child has passed away, they put a star on the picture. We had a chance to hold the babies at Amaset. Some of our group went next door where they have older kids who have HIV. They played a game of soccer with them. I think the kids won. Of course, they were barefoot, so our team was trying to be very careful. Baby Margaret, the little baby that I'm holding, was the 13th child born in her family. Her mother died during childbirth. She was premature and she had Down syndrome. And we received word a few weeks after we were returning home that baby Margaret had passed away. So we're thankful for the ladies that love and care for these children. We just feel really blessed to choose that the Lord chose us to send us to Uganda. Some of the ladies are going to share more about how we ministered, but also how we were ministered to. Lauren Lindino is going to tell you about our soccer ministry in Sirote, as well as Team Beyond's ministry to the blind. Allie Berlin is going to tell you a little bit about our soccer ministry, a little bit about our children's ministry. And our entire trip was wonderful. It was safe. It was amazing. We were all sad to go home. And we did not have one issue, not one concern for our safety, until our last day there. And Amanda Kaler's going to tell you a little bit more about that.
As Coach said, I'm going to share with you two different opportunities we had while we were there. And the first one is the soccer clinic. While in Uganda, we began each day with this soccer clinic. We had girls from three different high schools, all ranging from the age about 14 to 22. We would start off with some fundamentals, and then we would implement these fundamentals into different drills. And then about halfway through the morning, we would pause for a water and devotional break. Here, we would just sit in the shade, relax, get some water, and someone from our team would share a different aspect on being a Christian or a lesson for that day. Then after that, we would break off into two separate teams, and we would scrimmage, and we would have the opportunity to scrimmage with them. During one of the devotional breaks, however, someone from our team gave their testimony, and then someone else gave a lesson for that day. After we had said what we planned to say and do what we planned to do, unexpectedly, one of the participants in the clinic, Jamie, stepped up and asked if she could share with us her testimony. Hearing Jamie's testimony blew us all away. She told us how she came to Christ and how she was the only one in her family that was a Christian. She described the persecution she went through and still goes through. Seeing the courage she had was nothing shy of incredible. To hear of the persecution she faces every day was shocking, yet we were all left with an impression of perseverance from her faith and persistence to follow Christ. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about was the blind organization that we had the opportunity to go to. This organization was called Sirote Agriculture and Craft Association for the Blind, or more commonly known as SACAB. Here at SACAB, I truly learned what Paul was talking about in 2 Corinthians on how to walk by faith and not by sight. In Uganda, the blind are just as important as dogs, which in terms means they aren't important at all. They're never thought of or planned for, and very few would go out of their way for them. In the eyes of their culture, they are nothing. Here at SACAB, we had the opportunity to talk with one of the people who started the organization, Angelina, in 1992 to give the blind a voice. Angelina herself came from an IDP camp and lost her sight at the age of 5 due to the chicken pox. At SACAB, Angelina, along with others, have helped over 150 people in the region learn daily living skills and how to live independently. Recently, supporting churches have helped raise money to help them plant orange orchards and purchase necessities for knitting and different things like that. Also, one of the missionaries we had worked under, Josh, had purchased 6 solar-powered audio Bibles for them from Canada, all costing $100 each. And along with those Bibles, they had their Braille Bibles. And the cool experience about this was we actually had the opportunity for Angelina to read Psalm 23 to us aloud. The strength in Angelina's voice was encouraging to us all. To be able to see how she embraced her not-so-great circumstance and used it to glorify God left a lingering desire for me to want to do the same through all my circumstances. Her passion and love for God was contagious to us all, and as I said before, it was there where I learned what it truly meant to walk by faith and not by sight. I guess I would say the one thing I learned most from each of these experiences is that despite persecution, we must always continue to persevere and seek the face of God, that our circumstances should never determine our obedience to Christ. Thank you.
Yoga Noi, everyone, or as they say in Eteso in Uganda, hello. Now, because we're a soccer team, we thought that the majority of our ministry would be running the soccer clinic, but we found that a lot of our time was spent in running a children's ministry, or VBS. In the United States, the median age is 38. In Uganda, that's 15. Now, for those of us who aren't math-minded, this means that half the population is over 15 and half the population is under 15. So we were reminded that our ministry was significant. Our pre-departure plans had been to prepare an arsenal. You may remember that final battle scene in Saving Private Ryan, where the guys sent to rescue Private Ryan scraped together to make weapons to keep off the advancing Germans. Well, that's kind of what we had to do, only we were facing a horde of kids who needed to hear the gospel. Each day before the lesson, we sat around the VBS craft supply suitcase and invented a craft that would remind the children of the lesson. On the first day, we gathered under a really fat tree. We presented 6 lesson, craft, song, and game times. We started by telling about creation. Stories about the fall, Noah and Jonah, taught the kids about the effects of sin. Jesus' ministry, death, and resurrection were on the 5th day. And on the 6th day, we explained what this means to them through example and testimony. As elected storyteller, it was challenging trying to craft a story that would capture the attention of infants through teenagers who only partially spoke the same language as me, if at all. But through the grace of God, our wonderful translator Basile, an amazingly animated skit team, we did it. Our numbers grew from 20 kids on the first day to 220 on the last, with parents and older siblings watching as well. We sang songs in Eteso, their language, before the lesson, and taught them songs in English after the lesson. At first, we taught them our favorite song, The Funky Chicken. And you can ask Kelsey later for a demonstration. At first, the kids were crying, half of them, at the song, but by the last day, they were enjoying themselves. After the songs came crafts. Many of the kids had never seen crayons before, or colors, as they called them. Although there were some problems with missing crayons and kids hiding their craft to get a few more, it went well. If we ran out of a craft, the kids were just as excited to draw a picture. On the final day, we made them wordless bracelets where the colored beads represented different concepts of salvation. After the craft, we would go out to a dirt lot in a field to play games such as Duck Duck Goose, which they loved, Simon Says, and soccer. Here we were able to share our love with the kids and through play and just have fun with them. Also, through the initiative of our host, Tim, we were able to teach them respect and not to laugh at peers who had disabilities. For me, the highlight of this trip was the children's ministry. I realized that I really do like little kids and have fun working with them. And I loved watching our team work together, whether it was with creating 150 foam fish 20 minutes before the Jonah craft, 70 more bracelets right before the lesson because there were way too many kids there than we had anticipated, pull off a great skit, or whether we were wrestling through conflict and deep issues in our lives. This summer was the first that I have really wanted to work for these sisters in Christ that I have on the soccer team. We learned again the basic principles of our faith and how profound they can be. On the last day, almost all the kids raised their hands to pray to commit their lives to Christ. We were told by our hosts that at least for two Sundays after we had left, the church where we did the ministry rose in children attendees from 30 to over 110. God certainly gave us endurance and encouragement through this trip, as well as a spirit of unity. Now, don't get me wrong, we still have our differences, quirks, and quarrels, but we were able to glorify God with one heart and mouth for the lessons he taught us together. Our prayer for each one of you, Geneva College, and Christians around the world is as stated in Romans 15, 5 through 6, that God, who gives endurance and encouragement, may give you a spirit of unity among yourselves as you follow Christ Jesus, so that with one heart and mouth, you may be able to glorify the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. So last but certainly not least, I want to welcome Amanda Kaler.
Yoga. Allie actually introduced what I'm going to talk about at the beginning very appropriately. I just wanted to briefly share with you what our team dynamics were going into this trip. Four out of five of our captains went on this trip with us, and as you know, captains are usually the leaders, the loud ones, the ones that make the decisions. And we were really nervous because we knew that four of us were going to have to be collective in our decisions throughout this trip, as well as some underclassmen who are going with us who are also very outgoing. From the eight teammates, all eight of us were the leaders of the team and the outgoing ones. And 4 days into the trip, God broke us down. And going into the trip, we knew that God was going to have to do some serious power on us because we were all pretty excited about getting together for 2 weeks in another country where we were all uncomfortable and out of our comfort zones and really bond as a team. But Allie shared it great that we really did unify as one team. And it was just really cool because we were expecting God to show his power just through our team. We weren't expecting him to show his power through. We couldn't really see what that was going to look like for the rest of the trip, but the story that I'm going to tell you is about God's power. So bear with me as I tell you the details, because I'm going to kind of give you the main point of the story at the end. So there should be a picture of the Nile up there. On our way from the airport to where we were staying, we crossed the Nile. We just briefly took pictures through our little windows in the van, and there's a picture of a guy walking across the Nile that Coach snapped on the way across and emailed me the picture when we got home from the trip. Very ironically, as I finish this story out, you understand why this picture is significant. But on the way back from where we stayed for 2 weeks to the airport on the very last day of the trip, we decided to stop on the Nile just because we thought it'd be a really cool opportunity to just kind of soak in so much history that's been there. And here we're from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, or the United States, and we get a chance to be on the Nile where it's been talked about in the Bible, and it's just really cool. We were just expecting this to be a really sobering time, but instead, we had a little incident. We took a group picture. Our bus driver got off the bus with us and took the picture, figured that he would know the rules of the Nile Bridge, knowing if we were or were not allowed to get out of the bus, and he took a picture because he was from the area. And as the group started to leave the bridge, they're all further down. The bus driver had already, we had two bus drivers, so one got out, one drove the bus all the way across. The rest of the group started heading towards the bus, and Coach stopped me and said, "Hey, wouldn't it be really cool if we got individual pictures on the Nile?" I was like, oh, coach, it's okay. Like, we kind of have a team picture. It's all right. Like, I don't really need one. She's like, no, like, let's get one. I was like, okay, fine. My camera was the team camera for 2 weeks, so I had thousands of pictures on my camera. And I handed it to her, and I leaned up against the railing. There should be a picture of me leaning up against the railing. And coach took the picture of me with my camera. So as I was leaning to take her camera and my camera from her to take a picture of her leaning up against the rail, we were stopped by a security guard. And in Uganda, they all carry semi-automatic guns over their shoulders. It's just kind of normal. I felt like our team should have had them somehow. But everyone there had them. And it was extremely terrifying because you don't see that here in the United States. You know people are important when they have guns, and it just seemed like security guards at gas stations and stuff had them. So it was just very, it was a very terrifying feeling. And so he had a gun, and he was standing from here to here to us, demanding our cameras. I was like, all right, first of all, I have thousands of pictures on here that I'm not willing to give you, and this camera was expensive, so I'm really not willing to give you my camera either. So I was like, coach stepped up and was like, no, sir, we can't give you the cameras. I'm sorry. Like, we'll delete the pictures, whatever you want us to do. And he didn't really speak much English, so he's demanding, give us the pictures, give me the cameras. Coach refused, and I was a sheep, and I gave him my camera, and I got very upset that I did because coach, I thought, was going to get away with it. She put hers in her pocket, and I screamed for Akambe to come over. Akambe came sprinting across the bridge because I knew that he would have clarity in this situation as I was panicking, and the man started talking to him in the native language, and Akambe had to tell him that he didn't know the native language. So our bus driver who took our pictures came running over also, and he intervened for Akambe and for us and started pleading with the guy, just give them back their cameras. They didn't know, like, we didn't realize we couldn't take the pictures. We're really sorry. And so I was looking at coach, and I was like, man, she has her camera, and he has mine, and I'm mad because I shouldn't have given it up. And within probably 3 or 4 minutes, our bus driver turned around and said, I really need you to give me your camera right now. Just do what I say. And as coach reached down into her little camera bag on her hip, the security guard lifted his gun at me and coach and pointed it at us and loaded it and said, give me your cameras right now. And as I'm shaking right now, I was terrified then. And Akambe immediately turned around and said, you guys need to get off the bridge. And so coach and I hurried across the bridge. I absolutely lost it. I started bawling. Coach had her arm around me trying to comfort me while she was extremely upset with the security guard calling him a scumbag and everything else. And we were upset because there was corruption, and we knew that that was corruption, and we knew that in order to get our cameras back, we were going to have to bribe them. And we were told by our missionaries that we shouldn't bribe them to get our possessions back, that that's just not the way that we do it if we want to teach them the right way to do things. So we got off the bridge, and I was bawling my eyes out. And as we were walking across the bridge, coach looked down at her watch and said, man, it's 4 o'clock in the morning back at home, because it was 11 o'clock there. There was a 7-hour time difference. She was like, everyone's asleep right now. No one's praying. That's why we're in trouble. And so we got back on the bus, and she went back over to Akambe and Jomboy, who were going to go have to bribe the security guard to get our cameras back. And we ended up paying $100 to get the cameras back. So the picture of me on the Nile is worth $100, which isn't cool at all when you think about it. But so we fly home. It took us 37 hours to get home from Uganda all the way back to Beaver Falls, and then I flew from Beaver Falls back to Philadelphia. So the trip was forever, and you can just imagine how far that is. But when I got home from Beaver Falls to Philadelphia, I sat down and told my parents and my brother this story that I just told you. And I was really nervous because, like, man, they're going to think that we are stupid, that we got ourselves in trouble. My mom interrupted me in the middle of the story and said, what time was it that you guys got stopped on the Nile? And I was like, well, that's funny that you asked. Like, it was 11 o'clock there. It was 4 o'clock here. Like, you guys would have been sleeping. Mom's like, that's funny because at 4 a.m. that morning, I woke up feeling anxiety about your team, worried about your team, wondering why I was worried because I knew you were traveling to the airport, and I just stopped and prayed for you guys. And I just had tears in my eyes immediately because, first of all, my mom's a prayer warrior, and I knew that she was praying for us regardless, but the fact that we made a comment about it on the Nile that day, having no idea that it was going to be my mom who prayed for us, and we got out of there safe. We could have been in some serious trouble. We could have been taken by the security guard. A lot of things could have happened, but God protected us. And so I guess I tell you that story and showing you the power of God. I want to read to you two verses very quickly. One is Psalm 147:5, and it says, Great is our Lord and mighty in power. His understanding has no limit. And the other verse is from Isaiah 40, and it's just a couple different verses. It says, "See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and his arm rules for him. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on a scale and the hills in a balance?" And we think of how big hills are, and we think of how big mountains are, and the fact that he is so much bigger and so much more powerful than that, that he can weigh them on like a little scale. That's pretty cool. So I just want you to know that prayer works, and that God is huge, and that he reigns even in Sirota, Uganda, when we were 37 hours traveling distance away, and here in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. And he was with my mom in Philadelphia that day, and it was just really cool to know that he has that much power. So just wanted to share that with you. Thank you for all of your prayers. It was awesome to go. I speak on behalf of the girls who didn't come up and share that we had an amazing time, and we have so many stories. So if you want to hear more cool ones, come up and ask us. But thank you for giving us the time to talk, and we have a home game at 5 o'clock. The guys have a home game at 7 tonight.